No cheating.
Okay, so this is the artist table number 4.
Okay.
Okay, my name is Ruth Owens, and I'm a visual artist here in New Orleans.
Hello, my name is Eva Christmas. I am an emerging artist in Atlanta, and I am currently residing in New Orleans.
Hi, my name is Raven Crane. I'm an emerging filmmaker and founder of the Women of Color Film Collective in New Orleans.
Austin Allen, a filmmaker, landscape architect, teach up at LSU, but live here in New Orleans.
Mariama Eversley. I'm a journalist, writer, poet, and restorative justice person.
Okay, does anyone have a particular desire to talk about their question? Oh, yours is blank. Oh, you have one that you want to talk about? Do you feel like you want to talk about something and we're on a roll?
Well, I think I'm going to formulate
Okay. I can do mine. The question is, thank you. What kinds of public art do you find valuable in New Orleans?
So we all
jump in.
I guess I don't. So now everyone's looking at me. That's like a tough question. I feel like I've been like really inspired by some of like the graffiti and wall art and just like murals done in the city. And particularly like Exhibit B was like something that really like blew me away that I saw happen here, and just like kind of reclaiming space a lot of times. So interested and like really inspired by the art that takes like lighted buildings or spaces and makes them a part of the community and like brings back that sense of community through like visual art.
What I found really helpful about Exhibit B as well was that it also highlighted like the housing oppression that happened in the project housing over there, and like didn't just put art over top of it. It also just, we talked about specifically like what has happened over time with like housing oppression in New Orleans. So not erasing space by, you know, making art on that kind of property. And also it made a physical space for people to go hang out for a couple months and like hear music and talk to people. So yeah, public art that draws people together.
Yeah, that's what I noticed about Exhibit B, that it was particularly successful in bringing in people. And it was so well attended, and I mean more attended than almost any other art scene that I've seen around here. It was always crowded. And so the particular formula that they used, I mean the day that I went, there was no music even, but I think that it did create a lot of interest, and I think the music also helped.
Trying to
connect with you with that?
I do think there is something to this layering that happens in that way. I love to see it in, like, the Mardi Gras Indians, Black Indians, some places. The thing is that it's seen as temporary on one end, but it is a kind of relationship to time that is totally different, you know, and so it often does not come out in the way that people think. And I think these smaller, you know, kind of manifestations of it are that way of saying, you know, we're here but not here, you know, and that thing. And one of the frustrations the city had, they did a study, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago called the 4C or something like that. It was the cultural, they were trying to map everything that was going on artistically in terms of the city. And they became absolutely frustrated with the Mardi Gras Indians because they would not tell them, you know, this is my map, this is where I come out. This is, they just wouldn't talk to them. And so they, you could see in that there is this expression, because that's part of the ritual for, you know, neighborhoods, is to figure out where the art's going to bloom, you know, or blossom, or, you know, come out. And I think there's something to that kind of, it's not fixed, you know, I guess is the best way to say it.
Yes, and I guess the graffiti is not really fixed either, that you see all the time. One of the projects that I've been working on is actually dealing with the New Orleans baby dolls, and so yeah. That is another art form, yeah, where it's not a fixed art form, and
yeah.
I can understand the city's frustration, because I am trying to document them and try to follow them and check. I'm like, okay, so where are y'all going to be marching? Well, we're not sure yet. We're going to meet about it. And that's like 4 days before. I'm like, what? Okay. I want to be there with my camera and get ready. So, but it is a something that happens within the community that I want to document. I want to show again through my art to give some history and some presence to these traditions that are not necessarily maybe as well known as the Mardi Gras Indians, which would be the New Orleans baby doll traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's art too.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Introducing ourselves so that the tape recorder can recognize your voice. So when we start the conversation, when they archive it, they know who's saying what.
Okay. We had a question that we were all talking about, and the question was, what kinds of public art do you find valuable in New Orleans? What kind of public art do you find valuable in New Orleans?
To what happens in Africa. talking about like the graffiti that we see on the streets. A friend of mine, Sally Heller, did a big piece for Prospect, and it was a piece that she put, it's called Linked, and it was put on this metal material, and she covered a whole side of a wall down on St. Claude with it. And it's just these huge links of like a chain. So she was trying to say, you know, we are linked as community members. And so she goes home after spending, you know, all this time and money putting this piece up, and then she came back the next day and it was had a bunch of graffiti on it. And she said, I like that. You know, I think it informs my work, and because of the graffiti, she got a write-up in the paper, and it became like a lot more of a meaningful work. I think that was an interesting way that I saw that work.
Does a sense of civic responsibility affect formal decisions made in your studio?
The studio metaphorical?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like studio could be used loosely. We have a lot of filmmakers, we also have visual artists. I mean, I'd be okay with starting this off. I mean, one of the things I've been doing over the last like year and a half is like trying to get together a collective of women of color filmmakers. So I feel like a lot of times with the work that I try to do, I want to have some kind of civic responsibility to be like responsive to something that's maybe not always involved. And I just have like I feel like all the noise is going in this corner. I feel like a lot of the work I want to do as like an artist is like responding to what we don't normally have or voices that are being like highly marginalized. So I do like to think that all my work is like responsive to that, but I mean, does anybody else want to talk more about that? Or?
I mean, I'm willing. My work is a combination of psychologically oriented and sociologically oriented. So, I have done a body of work about the baby dolls, and one of the pieces is a collage, and they look like they're very happy and they're joyous and everything. But on top of the collages are like little pieces of text from newspapers that I've cut out from the problems that we have been having with the unarmed killings of the unarmed black men by the police. And so it's for me, the psychological part comes in where I feel like I'm deconstructing the stories that have been written. They're just exorcising them with the exorcist, like exorcising that from my consciousness that this horrible thing is happening. And I put it on top of these dancing women, and a lot of people don't understand, like, why are you connecting those two? And it's like, well, if you live here, you would understand, or if you live this life, you would understand, like, we don't, we have to have some joy in our lives, we have to have some hope in our lives, and it's not just, like, but this is always underlying. This is always something that's underlying. So this reality that we're dealing with. And so that's a sense of, that's how I kind of bring like a sense of civic duty into my life, into my work. But I also feel like I'm want to be careful of being too politically correct, you know? I mean, I'm bringing the other side of the coin here, like the counter-argument to... I want to be very careful of that, and I don't want it to be like a Hallmark card, you know, like just so devoid of any grit or bite that that people look at that and say, you know, what are you really thinking? You know, like what is your real thought behind that? Because this looks like it's just, you know, very bit banal and trite, and like, yes, we've heard this before. We want something.
I'm fascinated just as these, you know, questions have come up over the decades, and you know, they still are to be resolved. And they're still to be resolved.
Yes.
And what's fascinating to me is that you have, I think, built in the African-American experience, a kind of collectivity, and that doesn't exclude you. I'm just saying that experience here, really, in America, is you have that responsibility somewhere in the back of your head. But I think it is critical that art disturb, you know? And I don't mean that in a way that traumatizes, but just that it disturbs the complacency. And sometimes that's not seen as civic. You know, sometimes that is seen as outside the civic realm, but sometimes it drives that civic realm right into, you know, a whole new dimension. And I think artists play the big role. You know, that's, you know, somewhere when you woke up one day and decided that was whatever that was, you know, you kind of disturb the universe, you know? And you can't run from it. You can't run from it. And you can talk your way back off the ledge a lot, and it becomes very mediocre in terms of what you're trying to say. And I agree, that's what you're basically saying. I don't want you to look at my, you know, art and say, yeah, I know she's gonna go 1, 2, 3, 4. Then she's gonna jump over here 1, 2, 3, 4.
Right.
You know, yeah, no. You know,
it's
something. Yeah.
But that doesn't. It also doesn't mean that it has to be like. It doesn't have to be vulgar.
No.
You know. So it doesn't have to be shocking.
No.
But you know, I don't know. I was listening to an interview about on NPR about the Beatles, and they just wanted to do something new. I mean, to us, you know, and they did. It was new. It's different, and people listened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there is nothing vulgar about what they perform, their performance. And so, I mean, if vulgar is your thing, that's fine. Or if shocking is your thing, I mean, that's fine with me. I pretty much like any kind of art. I mean, I'm kind of like very non-discriminatory in terms of that. But for myself, I have a certain way that I want to be, but I don't, you know, so I want to have it a certain way, but not prescriptive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting that they have the word civic, because civic implies like citizen and being like a citizen for the United States. But artists always seem sometimes so external,
anti-citizen. Yeah.
But it's still, you still have a responsibility to people, but I guess the word civic and civic duty is like interesting, and I guess also but does civic kind of mean like they implying like for your city as well, like you're part of a physical community and you're supposed to do something for that. Oh, I don't know, I guess like the tension I feel like between being an artist and having you making art for yourself too. I guess I also like this for me, the art, I don't know, I do different kinds of stuff, but at least like my poetry and things that I write, it's very much like, it's just like a thinking process, it's cathartic, and I hope that people can have a piece of my experience, can help somebody else, but it's not necessarily, I'm not like, well, let me do this art for this purpose, or for this person, or for these group of people, and especially not for the
kills it, probably,
yeah.
You know, if you're so so pointed and there's no mystery to it.
Yeah, and I also feel like for me at least different mediums have different purposes and like different ways of interacting with people. But I guess a civic responsibility, I'm like, I'm not sure. Certainly not for like this country.
I think that's really interesting that you mentioned like medium, because I think that's a thing I struggle with film is like, film is sometimes supposed to be this profitable like medium where you're supposed to be able to give it to lots of audiences, and sometimes what you may want to make is not very profitable or not very like engaging to all kinds of different audiences because of some of the prejudices against certain subject matters. And then also like going off of like civic, when I hear the word civic, I have a consistent habit of like redefining things and deconstructing them. So for me, my civic duty would be to dismantle that establishment and like really put something out there that is not the normative civic duty that's like prescribed to a citizen. So as like a Black queer woman in the United States, my civic duty to me is to make sure that my voice is heard and that the things I'm putting out there like present that voice and help present other voices that are being usually oppressed or like marginalized. So I think that's really interesting because yeah, I don't want to do a civic duty in the sense of like I'm going out and I'm only voting and paying my taxes. Like I feel like for me when I hear the word civic, like I'm doing so much more. I'm doing civic duties for also myself as well as like others who are not always represented in that like ideal form of what being American is. Like
No, good.
I totally go ahead. That was yesterday. You said in your studio.
Oh yeah, this thing. So it's like
whatever your
however you define it.
Idea of debt and like mother debt, a debt to my mother. And so I thought of that when you said duty, I guess. She defined it as a debt to the mother, as well as a debt that the place of the mother is, and just like this feeling of wanting to, like never being able to fulfill it, but like it's like a, something you can't really ever give back.
That makes me think too about how I feel like when I make art, I get really concerned about objectifying whoever's in my art and making people subjects, especially because, you know, as a Black woman and like the ways I've been objectified, I feel like I have a responsibility to whomever or whatever is like in the art that I'm making to make sure that the way I'm doing art and the way I'm engaging is not an objectifying process. And I feel like I have my responsibility, I guess, is in my decisions or like trying to make my process not feel objectifying, and that I'm making something that feels like a conversation and not like, here's my art, I don't know.
I'm in the same boat as you, I understand what you're saying.
It also makes me anxious too, but like, should I take this photograph? Like, is this objectifying?
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's a I think that's what's gonna make it interesting. I mean, that's how I feel that being in like a difficult spot like that, that's what will make the work interesting. I mean, that's just how I feel. But if you're not dealing with difficult problems, then like, what's the point?
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So I'm in the same boat. I'm dealing with the psychological and the sociological problems surrounding female sexuality, and that's like what my subject is, and so I understand what y'all are saying. Okay, this is my own psychology and how it works with me, but you can relate to this from a, you know, because we are all kind of dealing with these kind of problems, and objectification is a huge part of that, you know, especially as a black female, like you said, and that's one of the main subjects of my, but I don't want to get on a soapbox and preach, and I also don't want to negate anybody who wants to be a homemaker sitting at home taking care of her children. I don't want to take agency away from her and say, this is wrong or this is right. It's just like, I just want to present, because those are questions that everyone is asking. Mm-hmm. It's like, I present to you, this particular specific person and how she's dealing with her sexuality. But I don't know how that relates to civic, because there can be you probably know what the definition of civic is. When I think of it, I think of those cards on the Monopoly board, you know. You have your civic card, you know, it's like dealing with the water system and how to make your community function better as a whole. And maybe that's what we're doing, you know, by not representing ourselves as individuals.
And I think that we know that art has been marginalized out of the civic, and that's, I think, the important thing we're really getting to here is that, I mean, purposefully, for a lot of reasons, art has been like that in terms of these are the engagements that make place and cities and all the rest of it. And what I see that is encouraging is an assertion that now we're going to redefine the civic, you know. And I think that's what I'm hearing from everything that you all are beginning to talk about. And I mean, it excites me to see new generations be able to flip things totally on their head in a matter of a short time period that have been looked at as really, this is not going to happen, all right? These are like the pillars that you see in a big building downtown. They're not going to move. And all of a sudden, everything's changed up. And I think that's the beauty of this moment, is that civic is, I mean, it's up to y'all. I mean, y'all are doing it. I mean, in terms of, this is what civic is, you know. And I think you have to, you know, seize the opportunity to really say, I think civic is, you know.
It's an act of surrender, and I think
then they have that aha moment, you know, and it's like, wait, yes. You know, and that's the connection. So it's not just like you're like navel gazing, but others are invited in.
What you said, Raven, also stuck out to me about like being disruptive as a duty. And I think also when I hear civic, I think of like public space, at least in this country, is supposed to be very polite and very clean and like, you know, devoid of like anything that's gonna make anybody remotely uncomfortable. And using art to also disrupt this idea of like civic as being like, let's just be as like non-confrontational as possible and disrupting that as well. And not being I think there's also like within like Western ideas of art is like making art like universal, like universal themes. It's always pissed me off. But like when I was like a kid, like reading like books in the canon, like everyone has to read the Odyssey. I was like, why do we all have to read the same damn books? You know, it's like, and not having to like, I don't know, being disruptive in that way is a civic duty.
Have you read the Odyssey?
I did. I had to read the Odyssey, and I was like, why do we all have to read the Odyssey? I hated things like that. Like, why is this a classic? I was always like, why is this a classic book? I mean, I know why it's a classic book, because it's like written by a white person, but it's like, it's so annoying.
It's a language, so everyone's talking the same language. But yeah, let's create some new canons or some new languages.
Or it doesn't matter.
You go ahead.
It says, describe the exhibition scene, local versus international versus national presence. Describe the exhibition scene, local versus international versus national presence.
It's assuming we've been at all over the place.
There you go. Yeah.
I know. We're sharing the room right now with someone who actually is like a friend and inspires me, like Amani. Because a lot of her work that she's done has been about like art and like occupying spaces that are usually for the one person in art. So when I think of this question, I think of local art. Like you all are talking about how you're Indians and the baby dolls, and that is local art. That's like a culture. And then I think of like internationally, like we've got like Picasso paintings or like a special like artist.
Art and these like different tiers. I think about like who is making the art, who has access to the art that's being like seen. So like I just think this is like a really funny question. It's more of like a statement actually. But I don't know, when I think of art, I just think that like going back to like communities and like individuals and like people, it really depends on like who, what art, how we define things. So going back to those definitions, what is art, who are artists? Are they the 1% that are in these like in the Met or these like museums that are high end? Or are they the people at the ground level doing graffiti, like guerrilla art? Like I don't, this like brings to mind so many different things. I don't know if anyone wants to take this away so I can stop rambling on.
No, it's good, it's good.
But I don't, yeah, this just literally brings to mind so many images, so many like definitions of what an artist could be and what art is.
Well, like, why does it have to be an exhibition? I mean, it just looks like it's very specific, like art for an exhibition. Like, I don't see a lot of art in exhibitions. It's not the kind of art I consume.
One of the things that I always find fascinating about here is I think this is a collision and kind of convergence of all three in once in New Orleans. And yet New Orleans also suffers from the idea that so many places do, that if it's not here, then it must be better there, you know, and therefore you get these hierarchies that are built in right away that sometimes really kill the spirit of what happens on, you know, a local basis because of the way we measure it. You know, did you make a lot of money on that? Or did you do this? Or did you do that? Did you get the publicity? And I think it gets back to what you were saying about films. You know, there's an assumption that if I make it as a film that, you know, I need to have 200,000 people view it within this amount of time. I mean, it's one of the things that drives YouTube in a particular kind of way sometimes, I think, is when, okay, I had 3 million viewers. That, maybe that's important. Maybe it is irrelevant as hell. You know, and that's, you know. But I think that struggle is ongoing in that kind of way. You know.
I'm gonna take that question at face value and not ask like what is art. Because obviously this question, to your point, Raven, is not taking like the art that we were talking about earlier, like the baby dolls, Mardi Gras Indians, and the graffiti and the little love things everywhere. That's not taking anything that is not exhibited is not being addressed in this question. So if they're only addressing the question of the art that has been exhibited, then in terms of a local level, you know, you have Julia Street, which is definitely 1% driven and funded and whatever. And then there is like the St. Claude area, which is a lot more, I guess you could put it in more like an avant-garde category. And it's burgeoning. It is like definitely thriving. And I know we're always going to compare ourselves to New York, but I think that the visual culture in on St. Claude, everything is going to give it a run for its money. Then in terms of national, yeah, of course you look at New York, international. I mean, there's, you know, the art superstars, like the Venice Biennale. I mean, it's, I've been to it, and I mean, it is definitely one of my absolute favorite things to do. I mean, it's just, it's like taking Julia Street and St. Claude and all of these countries and putting it together. So it's absolutely a smorgasbord of, but they do have the Damien Hirsts and the huge superstars, but they also have, you know, El Amatsui, you know, so there's a little bit of both on the international scale. But I mean, to make it to that international scale is like, you have to be like, win American Idol, you know, has to be huge. But I'm not sure like what the point of that question is. Like,
I also feel like for me as a child of the internet, like when I think of international too, like I consume international things online.
Yeah.
And I don't even know like exactly how that figures into the answer.
Yeah.
But I feel like I travel like in my bed, you know,
yeah.
On the internet or on Tumblr and like looking at things.
Yeah, so maybe these distinctions are, they're a bit not
for me. I wouldn't say they're not important, but they're a bit more fluid because I have so much access.
Yeah.
So a film I love to show, you know, in class, like it's gotten old now, but I still think it has something to it in terms of its exit through the gift shop, which
yeah.
I think starts a series of questions about that kind of organization thing. And I see a question like that coming from that kind of, you know, what are we up to, you know, kind of.
No one liked that question. Let's move on.
Okay.
Did you want to formulate? You ready?
I feel like, you know, it's typical.
So this one says, what's your experience with affirmative action in hiring and exhibiting? That's why I
wait, what's the last part? In hiring and
exhibiting. I'm sorry, I didn't.
I don't even know if I even want to answer that. Are you going to talk about that?
I'm going to get a little bit more food.
I don't mind. I mean, it's just been, you know, years of seeing the same thing. I mean, in terms of it's a struggle. And I think it's a struggle as these institutions that create, you know, are in constant redefining of what is, you know, diversity, what is to be affirmed. And, the thing I like is Ta-Nehisi Coates' article in The Atlantic on reparations, because I think it set the tone of what that question really is about, which is what is owed and how it is owed and the implications of how it is owed. And of all cities that, you know, has this issue, this city has it in a major kind of way. I do a lot in Haiti. And so you realize that, I mean, so much of this is Haitian. And yet it can never be recognized as that, just as it can never be recognized as African influences in Louisiana, at least at this point. You know, it just is a struggle. And so then it kicks back.
Can you expound on when you say this is Haiti?
So in 1804, the population became 50% Haitian in New Orleans. And most people don't make that connection that when the Haitian Revolution happened, slaves and free Haitians came here in droves, influenced the architecture. This is often not seen as that, but it is, you know, very much everything in terms of infrastructure has that implication. And when you go to Haiti, you can see it, and you're like, oh, I get that's why they did this. The shotgun, the Creole cottage, the way we do streets, all that stuff, you know, was transfixed into this place. And yet, you know, for the very nature of what was going on, you can't really say, well, you know, you really made this happen, you know, and you really made this happen, you know, you couldn't do that, you know. And I think that's, so you have these layers of it, and when they pop up, that's when we want to affirm, you know, that there's some action in place that needs to happen. In other words, you know, more hiring, more this, more that, you know, in terms of it. And that's why I go back to his article, because I think it was one of the, with a younger generation really stating the case that, you know, you can affirm greater expectations out of a whole society to really not only include more African Americans, but even maybe have a more honest look at the whole picture, you know, which I think opens a lot of doors the more you're honest about opening up the conversation.
I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like, are you looking at this honestly?
Yeah.
Are you really looking at this honestly? Because you can disavow the entire past and just have like a small microscopic view on what is happening right now,
right,
in the world, and just totally forget about what's happened before. And that's what I think that the opponents of the affirmative action want to do.
Yeah.
And they don't understand what is owed. Ideas of like it's me first, and I'm doing this at any cost, and humanizing cost. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes, you know, I hear that all of our social problems are economically based. And it definitely seems like it's that way with the affirmative action.
Mm-hmm.
Like a huge culture and like a huge amount of African American people here, but like most of the population seems to be impoverished. Like a lot of the work I've done has been through the school system and seen that firsthand. Like they've lived in the city so long, their roots are here, like they are really like settled into the city, but the city has not always given back so much. As an outsider person, like I'm often like analyzing my perspective as a transplant because I'm not native to the city and just figuring out where I fit into that narrative and how I can like not perpetuate that narrative, but in fact like actually make a positive and like impact on it that helps the people around me by like bridging those communities. But that is like a thing I noticed like moving here like young for college, very like wide-eyed, that like moving from Houston, just noticing how many poor Black people, how many Black people I saw working jobs that were like usually jobs in Houston, which is still not acceptable given to like immigrants, like mostly Latino immigrants. So it was like very strange to see that power structure still very much alive and well, and just like so there, like all around me. Like one of my first memories of being in the city was going to Camellia Grill and just being really creeped out and not having quite the language for like why I was so disturbed by the power dynamics and interactions I saw happening in this restaurant with a mostly like Black staff in his like 50s. Like just being like really creeped out and not knowing like why I was. And now at this point, and like I've been living here for about like 6.5 years, like really starting to gather the language to understand what I saw happening in the city, and just like figuring out like, I'm trying to, what was the original question? The affirmative action. just figuring out like things like how like Black people from here will tell me that people don't want to hire them because they are from here. Like literally like the new organizations that come into the city will not hire people if they're from here. Like that's like in this, like that's to me like just so unfathomable to like think that someone would think that's appropriate, and to also just like go ahead and like classify people in a way that just makes them seem lesser even though you're in their city that they've been in for so long.
Like what they're talking to when they say they don't want to hire someone that's from here. The lack of opportunity, I mean the lack of preparation, the lack of access to schools, the lack of exposure to different things. Is anyone here from here?
I'm not from here.
Mm-hmm.
don't know where we came from, and a lot of people don't know where they're going. Or, you know, it's useful to to keep us there, off balance. It's definitely a useful strategy, and disavowing affirmative action is definitely part of that strategy. You know, and it comes up like every, it's in the news again. You know, every 4 or 5 years about, like, okay, was it the University of Texas that was just recently?
Oh, yeah.
Won some kind of, just like
that angry little redhead.
Yeah.
Was that also the incident connected to the bleach balloons? They were throwing, there were students who were literally throwing bleach balloons at, like, POC students. That was like a thing because they were like angry about their affirmative action.
One thing about affirmative action, I feel like the iteration that we have now of affirmative action, sometimes like it results in tokenizing and like having just scattered POC like in white places. But I think, at least from my understanding, what affirmative action was supposed to be was something more like reparations and not like tokenizing, not like...
Exactly.
It's like, right now it's more of a safety valve, so you feel like you have somewhat, some sort of access. But I feel like the way it's been wielded in my life is like a token. Being tokenized, especially because I've had a lot of access to education. So I've been like, oh, you get to be in this white place, and then you get to represent black people, and then we as white people feel better because we have you being lonely in this place. That's what affirmative action has been in my life.
Yeah.
And in terms of art, too, it's like, oh, you get to be in this art class and interview the one black artist we come, and we'll photograph you guys and put you on the website.
Right.
Right.
You know, run with it.
Yeah.
Run with it because you've been blessed, actually, you know. You've been blessed. There are a lot of people that are not in that situation. And so just take it and run with it. I mean, that's all we can do because what else do we do? You know, I mean, there are so many people that, like you say, like they won't hire people from New Orleans. Graduated from McDonald's, but, you know, did not get a good education. You cannot speak the same language. You were already, behind, and you started off that way. So, I consider myself lucky too. I mean, I was educated in a Department of Defense school. My parents had money to send me to a private school, et cetera, and get a good education. But my father was in the Army, he was in the Department of Defense, so I did get a good education. I was able to have that opportunity, but I tell my kids, you know, you're blessed. You're lucky that, you know, that, and I was lucky too. I got a free ride to Carleton College. Because of affirmative action, I mean, a lot of people didn't. But and that's why it was get so upset that they try to take it away.
Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't be here.
Yeah. I liked where you were going in terms of talking about trying to find those kinds of roots. And not quite figuring out all the things that are at play in terms of it. But I think it's an important journey that we go through here in this country, all right, which is that there's so much not said, all right, that in a way it makes you bound and determined to search. But on the other hand, it also allows you the freedom to construct, you know, and you should do, to me, both things, you know. I mean, you didn't tell me? Well, fine. These are my first three chapters of me, and these are, you know, the ones I know. And
construct himself, yes. Construct yourself.
Yes, you know, and I think you had to feel that, you know. You have that, and that's the bless, you know, and she's talking about you, you're blessed with their freedom to say, you know, this is what I know, you know, and this is what I can imagine I know.
So, brings us back to the Odyssey. Searching, you know, who you are. I didn't read it, by the way. I know what it's about. So, do y'all think that identity politics is still, I mean, it seems like we're all talking about that right here. Still a thing.
I hate that word.
Yeah. I'm not sure like how
you can't say it. You can't say the word, but you can do it.
Well, no, I'm just like, how do you define like what? Like, for me, that's like a term that's something from maybe like when I was younger I heard, but it's not like so it's something I hear now. So like, how do you define like identity politics? For you, what does that mean or what?
Well, it's searching for yourself. I mean, it's not, I mean, I guess what you're referring to is like, okay, like the feminism and then the you know, the AIDS crisis and all of that and you know, defining yourself in those realms. But
No, I was just trying to figure out like what the term identity, because I think I too, like when I heard it, it kind of triggered me a little and I wasn't sure if I like really agreed with like what that term meant. And so I was just trying to understand like how that's defined. I don't know.
It could be different.
I think for me, like, my brain was, like, reaching for, like, how to define it and, like, respond back to that term. I think that's what I'm saying, if that makes any sense.
Just the way that identity politics, was it that just the word?
Yeah.
Is that, like, Marxists wanted a word to talk about when people who are not white men want to talk about the way that, like, inequality affects them, that is not just about class. Like, oh, this is identity politics. Like,
okay.
Which is just, that's
putting
just the way.
In a certain category.
Yeah, which also, but by doing so, marginalizes that experience of oppression as being particular to them and not universal. And when we talk about class, this is a universal conversation that we can all have, but when they want to talk about their issues, it's identity politics. Which is just the way that I would use that word, which might not be the way everybody thinks of it. Uh-huh. That's just the way that the word came to me. Mm-hmm. I was taught what that word
meant. I see. So you wouldn't say identity politics when you're talking about like what we were talking about?
Not really.
Would you just say identity, or what do you say?
Sure, like identity.
Othering, yeah, for me. The way it's been wielded by universities.